afternoon, folks. This is Carolyn Evers. You know, I'm just in great joy to be here talking to you today. Hopefully, you're on the other end wanting to listen to what we have to talk about. Before we begin, though, what we're going to do is give our telephone number out to reach me here at the station. And the number in the U.S. is 877-876-5227. And for those of you who might be out there listening to my voice and have never heard this show before, something that I am able to do is send a portion of my consciousness to the center of the cosmos where all of the records for the souls from the moment that they were created by Source are there in the care of the cherubim, and we are able to access that information. When I do readings for people, I find such extraordinary information there. Many people who ask for a reading are interested in their present lifetime. In other words, what did they come to Earth to do? What is their mission? What are the pre-agreements that they made with their soul before this entity came into this lifetime, the one that you know of as who you are? So call me if you have a question about your past or perhaps your present. You know, the line between the two dimensions, the dimension that we are in and the higher dimensions that we are working towards, are becoming thinner. And we're starting to remember things. And apparently something that I said caught the imagination of someone. And your name, caller?
My name is Brian.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Karen. How are you?
I'm just fine. What's going on in that wonderful head of yours today?
Oh, man, a million questions.
I know. You know, you remind me, when I was a student in school, my mind was always going much faster than my instructors, right? To ask some questions. I think I used to drive them crazy.
Yes.
And I sense in you this same wonderful process going on, this curiosity. What is it all about? So, Brian, what can we help you with today?
Well, every time I get online, my heart starts racing.
And why is that?
Oh, just the anticipation.
I just love it. Heart races.
You're going to get those butterflies in the stomach and stuff, and
you
just
know,
like
you're,
that of bliss.
You're the first man that has said that to me. I love it.
It's the anticipation, the excitement of, you know, what's said and what comes through. It's just so beautiful, you know.
Isn't it exciting?
And to share that with all the listeners, I mean, that's great.
Yeah, you know, I have to tell you this, Brian. I understand the excitement that you're talking about. When I do conference calls or when I have a master here or an archangel that I'm conversing with and I'm touching this information as it comes forth from the other side, there is an excitement. I understand exactly what you're talking about. It is the wonder of somehow touching a part of the divine. It is what we're really looking for today, isn't it?
Yes. It's like when you can almost ask almost any question and get some type of answer. It's magical.
It is magical. And you know what I think of sometimes, Brian, when I'm doing this work? I think of, 2,000 years ago, maybe earlier, humankind was scratching in stone. Then they started scratching in wax. Now we're on the internet.
Yeah, communication is really, really amazing.
Yeah, so what's here for tomorrow?
Yeah.
We kind of know that, don't we?
Yeah.
When I was talking to some beings on the other side, they were talking about when we ascend to the next dimension, how the past, the present, and the future all melds into one. You know, I'm not sure that those who think of ascension are thinking of that process. That time when there is this oneness, where all we've ever been, where all we hope to achieve is all right there in the palm of our hands. Oh, Brian, I could tell. When you get to that high dimension, you're going to love it.
That's, I guess, sometimes I wonder about that. I'm wondering, you know, when we move up and, you know, like right now, the capacity, how much brain power that we use is only, you know, scientists say, what, 10 to 15%? And I keep wondering, with the ascension, is it more like using more of our minds? And then do we recall so much more of our past lives? And, you know, just that's what I was always trying to wonder.
Well, I'll say this, Brian. You're absolutely right. First of all, there's a large part of the brain that we are not currently using. Mm-hmm. We will be using that. But as I do my work, as I am reaching ever higher into the dimensions, my brain changes. My brain waves are changing. The connection between the right and the left side of the hemisphere is melding with one another. They're working in tandem with each other. And what I have heard about this is there comes a time, you know, I think it's very difficult to say, oh, this line you're in this dimension, this line you're in that dimension. It's
right.
An ever gradual progression. And as you progress, as your physical and your spiritual moving together in the higher dimensions becomes even more pronounced, you then are able to access a higher level of, well, I would say mental ability, but it is also that spiritual connection that we have with the other side. We're able to access more of that. It becomes more clear, more defined. This is what is in front of you, in front of me, in front of everyone. It's an extraordinary journey. And I know that you enjoy the journey. Enjoying the future. Mm-hmm. You're in love with the now, as I am. So,
yeah.
Brian, what can we do for you today?
Well, this will be interesting.
They always are, aren't they?
He does.
Have you ever asked a question that wasn't interesting?
Well, I think the listeners might like this question.
Okay, so you're asking this for the listeners, not for yourself.
Basically, yes, it's more for the listeners.
Oh, okay. I'll keep that in mind.
I know many, but I've always found it intriguing, mysterious, and amazing about the unicorn kingdom.
The unicorn?
Yes, and these mythical creatures. And I was wanting to know from the cherubim or whoever comes through, what were the unicorns? Were they kind of what we see as a horse with a, you know, something coming out of their forehead?
Mm-hmm.
And I was wanting to know, are they still on this planet, just in a higher vibration, or did they move on to different star systems? Or also, did they work in the time of Lemuria and Atlantis with the peoples at those times?
Well, I'll ask the cherubim that for you, Brian, but
yes.
I'll tell you something about the unicorns, that the mm-hmm. unicorn that comes down to us from the troubadours. And
the troubadour?
Yeah, during the Middle
okay.
Ages, when we had the troubadours,
mm-hmm.
who sang the songs in the different courts. They weren't
yes.
just singing songs.
Is it kind of like the jesters?
I think sometimes they are expressed as mm-hmm. a jester, but the troubadours, as I am speaking of, are mm-hmm. minstrels primarily who traveled from castle to castle. They were welcomed because they were carrying the news. They were very prominent in the south of France in particular. I don't know as much about them in other countries. They seem to have a long line of acceptance, particularly in the south of France. And they were gentlemen who were taking the truth as they understood it, put it in a song where the truth that they were trying to express to another person was in a code, and it was because this was a time when anyone who thought the church and the state was melded into one being, and if there were anyone who believed differently or taught differently than the precepts of the church, they were actually heretics, but it was also a crime against the state.
Kind of like the Inquisition.
Well, this would have been before the Inquisition.
Mm-hmm.
And so the troubadours, you know, there has been a long line of hidden truth, and it surfaces, and the troubadours carried this information encoded in their songs, but they used certain symbols and signs so that as they traveled from castle to castle, the song was understood. One of the symbols that they used, and the reason that I bring this up, is one of the symbols that was used during this time was the unicorn. And the unicorn at that particular time was a symbol for Christ.
Ah.
Now, why they chose the unicorn as a symbol for Christ, I really don't know. But
I would think it'd be more like a lamb for Christ. I guess like the church used. But
in their tapestries, if you look at some of the tapestries from the Middle Ages, especially coming out of southern France, I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I haven't noticed the lamb. The lamb is more of a Christian, has a Christian religious context because they're considering the lamb as
sacrifice.
Christ as being sacrificed, yes.
Right.
But
right.
With the unicorn, one of the elements besides representing Christ was that it also represented wisdom. And you can understand that if you consider that the minstrels were esoteric in what they were spreading. They were not spreading the accepted dogma, but they were expressing esoteric information. And if you look at the unicorn, where is that horn located?
On the top of the crown of the head, yes.
Well, as I perceive it...
Well, kind of in the third eye, isn't it?
Exactly. This is
in
how
the third
I,
eye, yes.
Yeah, this is how I would perceive it. And so if you take that tradition from the Middle Ages and you look at it as that in that perspective...
And the spiritual eye. Yes.
Yes.
Ah, I see.
And if you take that a little further...
Mm-hmm.
If you think about the Middle Ages, these were people who were not educated from the point of view that many of them did not even know how to write.
Yeah.
And so information that was passed among the masses, so to speak, came in forms of symbols. They came in form of stories, things that would be memorized, things that they could sing to one another. The propaganda of the ruling classes used symbols on their coinage, so that you see a lot of pictures of on the coins of the leaders of the country. Well, it was
kind of to show you, like, to remind the people who's in power.
Exactly.
On a daily basis, so there's fear spreaded to control the masses by fear, yes.
So all of this, you see, people were very attuned to symbols during that particular time of the year. not particular time of the year, but that particular time of history. And in the south of France, many people do not realize the esoteric information that the Southern Knights held. It was one of the reasons why the Pope called the crusade against Southern France and why their castles were destroyed, because they had esoteric information that they didn't want to get out to the people. And their esoteric information, surprisingly, came from Atlantis through the Jerusalem area at the very finding of the secret information that the Templars dug up in Solomon's temple. And so that there is a line that you can trace from Atlantis to the Middle East, and then to France. They understood esoterically a very direct line to this information. Mm-hmm. And so when they the people understood that, yes, the unicorn meant Christ, but Christ from a little different point of view, perhaps, than what the current teachings were.
So it wasn't mostly wrapped up, the wisdom wasn't so much emphasis put on an individual, it was more of a higher wisdom.
It was a higher wisdom, but you see, along with the higher wisdom, and one of the reasons why the Cathars there was a need to exterminate the Cathars is because they believed that this wisdom could be attained by each individual by looking within.
Did not
Jesus say this? I mean, if you look at Jesus' records that has come down to us, one of the messages that he keeps speaking of is going within to find the Father.
The Father's kingdom, yes, within.
And so this was not something that the church wanted to get out. It was not something that the kings wanted to get out. They wanted to have their thumb on the people of power, and they didn't want people thinking for themselves.
See, it's kind of sad, Carolyn. If the kings and the queens and the knights back then, if they understood, and the armies understood that this was for everyone, even them, that they didn't have to learn to try to control the people, they could have just went within their hearts themselves. It's a win-win situation for everyone.
You know, you're absolutely right, Brian, but you're looking at the situation from the point of view of a person in this particular century.
Yes.
When you look back in the Middle Ages,
it's a lot different, I know.
Oh, and if you've ever been to some of these places in these areas that we're talking about, the energy of, to me, the energy from the land is very clear. You see, the people were bound to the soil, and the soil was owned by the king or the king's representative in that area.
Yes.
The people had nothing. They were, I mean, we call them peasants, but in essence they were slaves. They were slaves to the land, slaves, and they traded their freedom for protection. You know, during that period of time, there were all of these marauding groups of people. I mean, I've had many memories and visions from these past times where the people are lovingly tending their crops and some marauding group of individuals swoop down and kill them all for everything they have, for their land. So there was an awful lot of this. And
so maybe in the beginning, you could say, yeah, I guess it was in the beginning, you know, that when the kings came and people paid their taxes for protection, maybe that was okay, but then people, kings and queens, they started to get greedy over the years, you know?
But you know, it's a subtle thing, Brian. Look,
sure.
Look right now at what's going on in our country. How much of our freedom are we giving up in the name of security and protection?
Exactly. That's what I was getting to.
Yeah. How much are we giving up? And, you know, we supposedly own our land, own our houses, you know, have a police force here, but how much...
The so-called freedom of speech.
Mm-hmm. How much are we giving up?
A lot.
Yes. For this sense of what is called, you know, I'll give up my freedom. Protect me, please.
But you know what I like to say, Carolyn, about that?
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
But now, you know, like I'd like to say about that.
What?
It's like how we were talking about in the past. And now in the future, you know, for the people that are in power, you know, the government leaders, the people who make, you know, who have real authority, and if they could open their hearts too, you know, and they could see that it's a win-win situation for everyone. They don't have to control anything. They really don't.
I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying, but let's look at it from another point of view. Let's look at it from the point of view of the people, Brian.
Yeah.
How many people really become involved in what is going on in Congress? We have, in essence, given our power over to those that are called the politicians, and basically, you know, you take care of this for me. We vote them in, you take care of this for me, and how many of us are really looking at the bills that are being proposed? If we disagree with what is being proposed, the money that is going out, do we contact our representatives? What kind of input are we putting into this process?
Yeah,
now, I was just reading on the internet. I could be wrong. My memory might be faulty, but it seems to me that they just passed, I want to say, $53 billion of the president's request for funding the war, and that is a temporary request until September where they're going to review it again. Now, I mean, somebody out there might correct me if I'm wrong about this $53 billion, but we are not putting any of this, all this money that we're spending is not showing up in any records. It's a debt against our future.
I know every little bit, everybody that has a voice, like on this program,
mm-hmm.
and those who just, you know, try to make a difference and who are making a difference, actually.
We're trying.
You know, and even if it takes a very, it's like we're planting seeds in the heart of men and women. You know, it's little seeds. And it takes time, and it might take decades, but you're making, well, it's a movement. It's a shift in consciousness. It is working. It's just going to take time.
It's going to take time, my dear, but contrary to that, I don't think we have decades.
I know. I know what you mean. I think
this tide of what Americans want spiritually, you see, as I see it, so many in the country are not thinking of these spiritual concepts that our forefathers had when they put together what I think was a brilliant constitution, the checks and balances that were put into the system that are not being used. You know, Congress has the power of the purse, and they're not using it.
I guess I'd like to shout out to those politicians out there, if I may. Is that okay, Carolyn?
What would you say, dear?
I was wanting to... I wanted to give a shout out to the politicians.
Shout out?
Yeah, I had something to say to them.
Oh, okay.
This is good. This is nice. To all you politicians out there who are listening, I have love and respect for you and your positions. I know it's very difficult, the choices that you have to make on a day-to-day basis. And to all those of secret societies, I understand who you are. I love you with my heart, and there's really no need to control anymore. Just allow yourself to open your hearts. This is a win-win situation. Remember, my friends, this is your planet and home too. We all are one on this planet. And our decisions we make now will shape the future of tomorrow. So just join in for the better of humanity. And that's all I like to say.
Well, it's a beautiful thought, and I certainly would not contradict it in any way, but I would like to add that perhaps in addition to that thought, what we as light workers could be doing is several things. First of all, energetically send light to the leaders. Many times when we see something or hear something that we disagree with, we're not sending light to help.
We
send them negativity. So I would say one of the first things that we can do is send light and ask the higher forces, God, to work this out for the benefit of everyone. In addition to that, to meditate. Now, I have gotten this direction many times from many of the people who have come forth to give information for the books that I put together. See ourselves around the entire planet united in love.
Yes.
See love. See cooperation. If you can, do this often. It is like we are part of a united ring around this planet. See yourself connected to your neighbors, hand in hand, bringing forth nothing but love and cooperation. Put this into the grid system constantly. We could be waiting in a line in the grocery store. See this often, because what our thoughts are is what we are going to manifest, and this is what we want to manifest. We want to manifest the peace and the love and the cooperation among all people. And it is the light that does that.
That's beautiful, Carolyn.
Well, it is beautiful. It's not something I originated. It is something that the spiritual hierarchies have asked us to do.
Yes.
Archangel Michael has asked us through his writings, through me many times, to do this. Pope John Paul has asked this in through his book Viva Papa, and so it is a theme that is constantly being revealed to us, and it is such a simple thing, and it is something that we don't have to wait for until someone organizes some special event. And I hope that everybody who hears this will make an effort to just visualize this. See yourself holding your neighbor's hands in a circle around the whole planet. See the whole planet in love and cooperation and peace. We can bring this forth if we do these things.
We sure can.
Yes. Not only that, Brian, if we can keep ourselves in this higher vibration, it is the very thing that opens up the door for us to move into the higher elevations with our body and our soul. Some call it ascension. But this is what we need to do. We need to be on that vibration of love, the same love that I hear in your voice, the sound of your voice, every time you call in here. And it is a beautiful thing, Brian.
Thank you.
You know, when you see someone, the eyes are the mirror of the soul. When you don't see them and you hear them, it is the sound of the love that is in their voice that is the picture of their soul.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
I think I answered your question from the point of view of history about the unicorn. How about if we take a moment now and see if we can find some additional information from the chairman?
I would love that. That sounds good.
So, you know, we talked about that for maybe 15 or 20 minutes. Let's see if we can get an answer. I don't know what's going to come forth, but it's an interesting question, Brian.
Carolyn, that what we spoke about, that had to come through, though.
Yes, I think so. And the reason that I think it did have to come forth, Brian, is as I remember my lifetimes, I remember being in these places that I'm speaking of. I remember the troubadours. I remember the castles. I remember this information being handed in secret. And there are many of those out there who do not remember that. However, when you discuss these things, it's like a little trigger that
inside,
yes, it helps open these things in their mind so that they can remember what they understood in the past as a truth.
Yeah.
And I think that is the reason why I have this gift, and it is a gift, to remember past lifetimes, to bring forth this information. It is like it's a reminder. You know, I'm no different than anyone else. I was there. You were there. It is time now to open up your heart and your mind and to remember. That
yeah.
is what this part of our lifetime is all about, to remember the magnificence and the glory of who we were in the past, and let's bring it here in the present and materialize it.
That's
so
beautiful. Yes.
Yes, life is so beautiful, isn't it, Brian?
It is.
Let us see what we can find out. Okay.
Okay.
Give me a second. Every time I see these lovely ladies, I get so filled in joy because they just exude this loving relationship.
Yes.
And to us humans, they show the people on Earth, they are androgynous, but because of how they feel towards us, this nurturing spirit, they show themselves as their female aspect, these very graceful, tall, beautiful cherubim. And they're showing me a record. It's not a human record per se. It is a record, and records aren't really books. They are more like a floppy disk energetically, but they show it as a book so we humans can understand this. And they are showing me something that has a seal on it. And the seal is one of those seals or sacred geometric shapes that's placed on the record when Source has reviewed the information. And this particular file, for lack of a better word, this source of information, is not just about the unicorns. What this holds is symbols in general, that what they're showing me is that, it is Jesus that they're that they are talking about right now. This soul, whose incarnation at that time was known as Yeshua. Of course, that was not his soul name. It was just a name that he carried at one lifetime. But yes, in that instance, that particular symbol did represent him. However, he was a master. One of the gifts of his mastery was this connection of the signs that we call symbols. They're showing me that a symbol is more than what it appears to be on the surface. That is the outward sign. The inward sign is this connection to energy as it comes from Source, that it is sort of like a keyhole. One puts the key in a keyhole and turns it to lock or open a door. And the symbol acts in that manner to unlock the mind. Now, they're showing me the brain with the mind as an opening in the back, not the front. That the front, the individual perceives through their own communication with information. The back is the opening where information is placed there so that it can be integrated and assimilated into the mind and therefore work through the third eye through the front of the brain, so to speak. So that the language of symbols and that the symbol that we are speaking of is only one symbol, but it is the language in general of symbols that they are referring to, that this was a gift given by Source. Yeshua cooperated with this. Yeshua understood how the symbol worked and how the symbol was connected to the word. He used words that evoked symbols, that evoked streams of information that we could tap into by following the picture that he was showing us. And this same concept was used in the Middle Ages. They're commenting on this because we're talking about the Middle Ages, but that understanding was with humanity through its very beginnings, that it was on, it was etched in temple walls, it was etched in stones that people walked upon, that the symbol was a very strong force.
Was it more of a universal symbol?
They were universal symbols, but the purpose of it was that it could overcome through a very gentle manner a mental programming that that the frontal brain posed for the individual. In other words, this was knowledge seeping through the back door that could be integrated. So that, let's say a person, and this is myself speaking now, let's say a person was intimidated in such a way, was given information and told that this was truth and it wasn't truth. The symbol was subtle. The symbol could be planted subtly in the mind, in the brain, through the back door, so that it could change the knowledge and the understanding through the front door.
That makes sense. Interesting.
And so, symbols. And they're showing me now the fish that the early Christians used to illustrate Christ and to admit to one another that they were Christians. This was a very strong symbol.
Yeah.
And they were using the language of the symbol so that immediately, without any words, without any pictures, just this little symbol, people understood immediately who they were, what they stood for, and what knowledge they shared in common. This was true of the pagans. This was true of any culture that has come forth in the world that passed information of the initiate. In other words, there was knowledge that was in the forefront, and then there was deeper knowledge beyond that that could be passed between one another with a symbol so that all understood.
So they also carried those symbols, universal symbols, from star system to star system as the incarnation from lifetime to lifetime, didn't they?
Let me see what they say about that. You always like to put in that star system. What they are showing me is that, yes, this concept of symbols is a general concept among everyone, whether it is on your planet or are in other planets. Some symbols different star systems have in common, some symbols not. Some symbols are particular symbols to that particular planet and group of individuals, and it is because the symbols are the deepest hidden, come from the deepest hidden part of the mind and the soul. Therefore, experience governs the meaning of a symbol. So experience in common, the symbol will mean the same. If there is experience that is different from one another, that symbol is not going to work. It's not going to plant that seed in the mind, so to speak.
Yes.
So the symbol's based on past experience.
I see. Well, that answers a lot. Thank you, Carolyn. That sure helps me understand things a little bit on a higher vibration and different dimensions.
Well, until the next...
That's really nice.
Yeah, until the next time, Brian.
Munch
on that one a little bit, and I'm sure you'll think of another. We're delighted to answer your questions. We get into areas, don't we, that I perhaps might not have thought about.
That's wonderful. You have a beautiful day, Carolyn. Thank you so much.
You too, Brian.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That, I think, was an interesting revelation from the cherubim about symbols. And one of the reasons why symbols are so strong with people is because they are so subtle and they're working on a hidden portion of our consciousness. And I would also like to mention that there has been, as far as I'm concerned, something marvelous. For those of you who know my work, I work on conference calls with Archangel Michael. And he is announcing an arrangement called Fireside Chats. He has invited Mother Mary, her son, Jesus, or Yeshua, and, of course, Mary Magdalene and Master Kuthumi. This is a panel. Imagine this. All of these illustrious individuals coming forth and sharing with us their concepts of what ascension is about, what it means, where we are going, the latest information, and you will have the ability to ask these masters your own questions. And so if this is something that is of interest to you, go to my website, www.carolyn, C-A-R-O-L-Y-N, Evers, E-V-E-R-S, .com, and go up to the right-hand corner, click on conference calls, and you can find the information about this, what I think is the most incredible event. There is also a sample of a past conference call that we've had with Archangel Michael. You get an understanding as to the kind of information that is brought forth, the emotions of love, the feelings that you have when I believe this portion of the divine comes to earth and you can touch it and wrap your heart around it. And to me, it is the most marvelous experience. And so for someone else who might be out there listening to our words, you might have a question about yourself that you want us to find out from the cherubim, a universal question like Brian had, give us a call. 877-876-5227, and in Canada, 888-810-8322. All of my work is found at that website. There is something interesting to Journey to the Other Side. It is a 10-month installment plan, you might say, where an angel, a master has come forth, and they are discussing something that has to do with ascension. Mother Mary starts from the early beginnings of the physical, entering our world human beings 200,000 years ago coming in as Homo sapiens, and she draws a line from there to then. When we were talking with Brian earlier about symbols, one of the things that comes to mind, especially when we start talking about that area there through the south of France, through Jerusalem, I am reminded of the secret societies. Information that was held in Atlantis during the very high days, the very when human beings were at their zenith. I saw myself there with my twin soul, and I will describe to you what I saw as the picture of two Atlanteans during this very high period in Atlantis. What their energy was so high, it was on such a high level, that white light came forth from their physical bodies. Not only did it come forth from their physical bodies, but it literally shone through their garments. So there was this glow of white light about their garments. And no matter what color they were wearing, it seemed to have a white energy about it. This is what the human beings looked like then. Now, what I perceived was that the physical was very similar to the physical that we see in our own bodies today, but there was this energy associated with the physical that was so high. It was such a high vibration, and the physical vibrated on such a high level. This was before the fall. There's a long history of Atlantis, but you see, the secret societies came from that group who held these very high forces of love and light and vibration. The information had to go underground, so to speak, had to be hidden from the masses because there were those who wished to control it and use it for reasons that was against God's will. And this is what has happened to this very high information. It comes forth, it blossoms, and when those who wish to control it for their own purposes try and usurp it, the spiritual forces take it this underground. This has happened throughout society. So we've had these golden ages, and then we've had other ages when the information is hidden. And this happened, it reminded me of this because we were talking about these knights and leaders in southern France who had knowledge of this from the secret societies and were teaching this esoteric information in secret. And of course, when they were attacked and their lifestyle was destroyed, it went underground. It was then hidden in some of the sacred places that we have heard about. Montsecour, for instance, Rennes-le-Château. We have a lot of hidden stories about this. And some of it then at Rennes-le-Château was actually secreted into another dimension. At that particular area at Rennes-le-Château, there are, it is like a gigantic interdimensional switching station. If you see a place where trains come into a station and they have switches that put them onto other tracks, that is what it looks like there interdimensionally. And so that's where that particular information is hidden, but it is coming back piece by piece, some of it through our own individual memories, and some of it literally is being reprogrammed back into the human frame. And it is fascinating when this happens. I'd like to mention this because I know some of you are receiving this, and when it happens, there can be an element of fear around it if you're not aware of what is going on, and you might not consciously be accessing it. But when it comes into your mind, into the brain, so to speak, it almost looks like Morse code. You might be aware of it coming in. It looks like dots and dashes, and it comes in rather quickly. I know the first time it happened to me, I couldn't understand it. I was a little bewildered by it. And so I mentioned this to those out there who might be hearing my voice and running through some of these same things happening to you. It truly is a gift. It is being transferred to you for you to access. And if you have seen some of this, know that it can be easily accessed. Have the intention. Ask your angels, your guardian angel in particular, to help you access this. Meditate. If you can't reach it through meditation, when you go to sleep at night, plant that thought in your mind that you wish to access this information that has been given to you. We're coming now to the end of the hour. Can you believe that it is an hour already that has passed? We might have time for a real quick question if you call in right away. Get those fingers moving. 877-876-5227. Our friends in Canada can call us toll-free at 888-810-8322. Maybe you just want to sit back and relax and just be entertained, just listen to what we might be bringing forth today. And I do hope that what we are talking about are topics that is of interest to you. I think since we don't have another caller now, and I perhaps just have a minute or two, I would like to talk to those who maybe haven't heard this before. When I do readings for people from the cherubim, many times I am seeing in real time what is happening, and the creation of souls is so beautiful. We doubt ourselves sometimes. We've been told, we've been programmed that, you know, we are sinners, that we are not deserving, and I want all of you to know you are deserving. What your soul is little pieces that have been thrown forth from Source, actually coming forth from Source, particles of Source. That is what your soul is, and it was compacted and delivered to you through this great emotion of love, through colors, through sound. And when we see those particles in this brilliant white light form and vibrate to love and see the incredible colors that are coming forth, I have to say to you, each and every one of you are worthy as the sons and daughters of Source, of God themselves, that is what your soul is. Sometimes we make choices in our lives that we regret and need to redo that decision, redo that choice. But underneath of it all, we are following that command from Source to go and experience and to go back and take your experiences back to Source. It's what it is all about. And so, my dear friends, it is time for us to finally say adieu. Go to the website, carolynevers.com. So much there to find. If you like some of the topics that we've been talking about, there are books about it. There are readings to be done. And, of course, there is the conference calls. Hopefully, I can hear your lovely voices joining us and the masters. So to all of you out there for today, I say goodbye. I send you my love. And I feel that we have this very close connection with everyone. And so until Saturdays, Wednesdays, next Sundays, I'll come and speak to you again. Goodbye for now.